Hello and welcome once again to Geek News and Craft Brews Week 11. Today we talk about Daredevil getting a second season on Netflix.
Right.
A Chewbacca Contra game coming out. Iceman is gay in the comics now. And we make our predictions for the Eisner Awards. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome once again to another week of Geek News and Craft Brews. I'm Steven.
And I'm Chris.
And as always, we are joined by... It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's alcohol! It goes through you faster than a speeding bullet and makes you unable to jump over even a simple curb. But we love it anyways.
Yes.
Chris,
yes.
What are you drinking today?
So I went out to Cali... No, I didn't. But I got this from Bear Republic. This is Racer 5 India Pale Ale. And it is out of California, if you couldn't figure out the Bear Republic title. I'm not a super big fan of IPAs. Mm-hmm. And I bought this because it was recommended to me. Yes. Apparently, it's supposed to be really good for the price point, which is actually pretty low. So, we'll find out.
Yeah. Or else you're not friends with that person anymore.
Well, it's the guy at the liquor store, so we're not really friends anymore. Maybe they got, like, boxes in the back.
Just trying we to need to unload this shit.
Yeah. So we'll see. Yeah. How about you, man?
I got Skinny Dip, which is a summer beer, according to the label. Yeah. And, you know, who am I to argue with the label? I think it's a American pale ale or American blonde ale. But I prefer summer beer.
I prefer summer beer too.
Yeah, out of New Belgium Brewery in Fort Collins. Always a big supporter and big fan of the local breweries in town.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, support your local breweries, always. And if you're in a good, safe place and of age, then crack one open and cheers. Join us.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crisp. That's an aggressive IPA. Oh, it's got a good finish, though. We'll evaluate it later in the beer profile. So
IPAs are generally pretty aggressive.
Yeah, they are pretty aggressive. Yeah. That hoppiness gets that tongue.
Slaps you in the face.
Right?
Yeah, but anyways, rolling into it right now, we're going to start out with Daredevil getting a second season for Netflix almost instantly after it came out.
I don't think anybody's... surprised. Anybody who's watched Daredevil, there's no way you can be surprised. It was just top-notch. Maybe even the best comic book TV show, live-action comic book TV show, that I might have ever seen.
And you are not alone in that opinion. Several critics have said exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Just watch Daredevil and go back and watch any episode of Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you'll be like, what?
And Netflix definitely raised the bar, and it's really launched its kind of Marvel line that it's going to put out there. Luke Cage and Iron Fist.
And The Defenders.
And The Defenders, yes, of course.
I'm so looking forward to all this, because these are, I mean, you could maybe even call them almost... I don't think B-tier superheroes is good, but they're not Captain America. So they're not Iron Man.
They're not in the public consciousness, even as much as Daredevil.
Well, they're not the first people you call when there's an alien invasion coming in.
You do not call Iron Fist to take out an alien swarm.
Right, yeah. However, both in the comics and what they did with Daredevil, seeing that grittiness, that on the street, you can actually relate to these characters way more than... You know, Captain America's out there. And it's such good storytelling. And it's the part of that gritty superhero story that I really like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm much more a fan of these types of stories than I am of the Thor saving the Earth once again.
Yeah, the issue with, like, the Thors, the Captain Americas, the Supermans, is they're so far above what all of us are, just... normal people.
Oh, yeah.
That it's extremely hard to relate to them. And you can make the argument that, especially with Superman, he's supposed to be that kind of shining example for us to follow after. Like they said in the movies, it's like they will stumble, they will fall, but one day they will join you in the sun. But at the same time, in practice, anytime he's fighting someone, he's going to win because he's Superman.
Yeah, yeah, that's the problem. You're never really afraid for Superman. Mm. But in like in Daredevil, just I think it was the second episode, they did a fight sequence that was just one continuous shot. It was in a hallway, and it was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
It looked like he just got done fighting a dozen guys. He's pretty worn out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was great. It was a great sequence. I did laugh a little bit. I watched the entire season. I laughed a little bit on how long it took Matt Murdock to figure out maybe he should wear something that doesn't, you know, cut as easy. Yeah. As like soft butter. Like, dude, they sell Kevlar. You know that, right? Like, you've been stabbed a lot this past few weeks.
Oh, man. Yeah. Right? It's, especially if you're doing that close quarters combat. I can see for, like, maybe a Green Arrow or a Flash or someone where you're really not going to have a lot of people that can get close enough to stab you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wear kind of whatever you want. But if you're a Daredevil,
yeah,
you're fighting just this close. You're going to get cut eventually.
Well, I like that. Especially there was an episode where he's fighting who I will only assume will be revealed later to be part of the Hand Ninja clan. Because it was all decked out in the red and everything. And yeah. Took it to him.
Yeah.
Daredevil got hurt bad. Yeah, Man Murdock hurt bad. It was still Man in Black in that episode, of course, but pretty great fight scene. And that was the one where he figured out that I need to, you know, step my game up if I'm going to be doing this.
I need to get some, like, actual gear if I'm going to keep doing this.
Did a really good job, though, kind of stumbling through relationships and really a lot of everything you can cover. That's people with secret identities, vigilantes with secret identities are going to run up against. What happens when my friends find out about me? I can't really have a decent relationship with this. You know, all sorts of other stuff. How am I going to be able to afford this equipment?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Should I even still do this? Am I making a difference?
And it was approached in a very real and genuine way, because other things have tried to approach that, the either why am I still doing this question, which is the one that seems to come out the most, but especially the last Spider-Man's dealt with the secret identity problems.
Yeah, I didn't like how they did that.
It was a very kind of cheesy surface level. It was like, I love you, but because I love you, I can't be with you, something else. Like,
yeah, they don't dive into it at all, but you have to give those people credit on the fact that they have, what, 90 minutes? 2 hours to tell that story?
Yeah.
When you have an entire season, 13 hours to tell the story, then you can dig into that a little
bit. Yeah, you can dig into it more, and I don't necessarily blame these Spider-Man writers. I'm actually like those movies. I seem to be in the minority in it. I like them. I
like them for what they are, popcorn flicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, anyways, back to what I was saying, it's a very superficial, kind of glossed over issue that is a real problem. I mean, if you have these super identities and you live this other life, those two lives can't really exist at the same time. They're going to come into conflict with each other.
We're
going to
see a lot of this coming up in Captain America 3, the Civil War.
Civil War, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge topic of Civil War.
Because Civil War was essentially the mandate that all superheroes must reveal their secret identities, which brings to a grinding halt the idea that, hey, I can still have this and live my normal life. That's not an option anymore.
Yeah, no way. What is, I think Civil War is very realistic. I mean, if the storyline, though, you know, I mean, if we actually had random super-powered individuals out there just kind of taking the law into their own hands, yeah, they're probably going to be at least regulated, if not completely shut down
by
those in power. Those in power don't like to share power.
Yes, but at the same time, how do you shut down a Hulk? How do you shut down some of these people? So they had to come up with the next best solution. It was like, hey, if we know who these people are, we can use some other way to try to control them.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Because they're not going to go toe-to-toe with the Hulk and win.
That's no.
Proven a million times.
They're kind of a legal thing. They're pretty much telling them, like, look, you either got to comply with this or just get out. Mm-hmm. Just go somewhere else. We don't need you here. And that's fair. I think that's fair enough.
Yeah. I like how in like the very first scenes of Civil War, Namor is at the table.
Yeah.
I'm just like, who? Why does he care? No government is controlling Namor.
Yeah, what?
He's like, he rules the seas. What government's gonna fuck with?
He's only gonna get involved if he sees personal gain from that. Yeah, he's like, okay.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You do you.
Yeah, but I do have to say, going back to Daredevil and Netflix in particular, I think we're really going to start to see a lot more comic shows, and I hope we see some independent series.
Invincible?
Well, they're not going to do Invincible. Maybe they could. I don't know. That'd be awesome if they
do. That'd be awesome.
But I could definitely see something, say, like Why the Last Man.
Why the Last Man, I could see. Sandman, yeah. I could see.
Sandman. Yeah,
that might be a little bit tougher with the hell scenes, but, I mean, yeah.
Well, yeah, they could do it. They have the, it would be expensive to do, but they have the technology now. And now that it's been proven that if you do an adult story on a streaming adult channel where, you mm-hmm. know, you can see how that story is supposed to be portrayed, it's really well done. It's fantastic. Oh, yeah.
It is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to Luke Cage, all that. And I said it in previous podcasts, but this is totally opening up the door for, like, Elektra and Bullseye and Punisher and all these badass, brutal anti-heroes.
Yeah.
Those are not heroes at all. Bullseye's a straight-up villain.
Yeah.
But coming in and just doing their thing and doing it well. Yeah, I'm
Can't
excited.
Can't wait to see it.
Yes.
Yeah, but moving into the next one, no snappy transition this time, sorry to let you all down, but, we're gonna make it up because we're gonna talk about Chewbacca Contra.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Initially when Steven told me we were gonna talk about a, Star Wars video game, I was thinking it was gonna be,
Battlefront.
The Battlefront, yeah, mm-hmm. because the trailers for that have been really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Actually.
It looks like a movie, almost.
Oh, yeah. It looks better than some scenes of the movie mm-hmm. on Endor. This game will also take place on Endor.
It will take place on Endor. in a very different way. Yeah, EA is coming out with all these big trailers and something, and Konami is like, hey, we're going to slip something in there. And they came out with this mini game, essentially,
yeah.
that's Contra, but with a Star Wars skin on it. Mm-hmm. You play as Chewbacca running across the forest of Endor. You're shooting stormtroopers, I assume, right?
I hope so.
Yeah. Let me take a look at this again. Yep, stormtroopers, those are.
Yeah, they look like they're all
turned into Yoda for a second there. yeah, but it's just a real simple Contra clone, but, you know, it's Chewbacca, and it's amazing, you know?
Well, Contra is an iconic game.
Mm-hmm.
That whole up, up, down, down, left,
up,
left,
up,
right,
down,
right.
down, left, yeah. right, left, right, BA start.
Yeah, BA.
Konami code.
Select start if you're playing two players.
yeah.
That's Contra.
Yeah, and it's burned into the consciousness of an entire generation.
Exactly. Yeah. You just even could have the symbols, and you know what it is. And I have no idea how many hours and hours and hours of my young life I put into Contra. That was one of those old school games mm-hmm. where you get, like, that code would give you more life. Yeah. It wasn't God mode. It wasn't anything else like that. It would just increase the amount of lives you had.
Yeah.
Because initially, you start with three.
You start with three, and I have never met anyone that's ever beaten Contra with three lives.
Yeah, get all the way through
it's
to the
impossible.
End with three lives. It's pretty tough. yeah, it's pretty. You'd have to be like a savant at Contra to get through. So I'm excited about this. I will definitely buy this game.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I think it's being released. Yeah, it's a free-to-play game. Yeah.
Yeah, so done.
So done, yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. I wonder if the Konami code works on this. Or if they, tone down the difficulty at all.
I hope they don't tone down the
difficulty. I hope they don't tone out in the difficulty, but yeah. At the same time, I hope they leave the Konami code in there.
Yeah.
Or else I'm never going
to
win.
I'm really excited to see what the bosses are going to look like, because hopefully they're like AT-ATs and walkers and other cool things like that that he has to deal with. Go Chewie. And I'm glad that Chewie is the main character.
Yeah, and not Luke or Han.
Yeah.
Han seems to be the obvious choice for me, but...
Yeah, no, but not Chewie's. I've always said that, and I know we did a bunch of Star Wars on the last podcast,
yeah.
Especially about Endor, but I've often thought on that special move to Endor that Chewie was really one of the only people who should have been there.
Yeah, Chewie, the experienced hunter on Kashyyyk, which is a very, not quite as forested, but it's a very similar kind of layout, and he's... with his fur and everything, just perfectly designed to go through there and just wreck everyone.
Yeah.
Then you send out Leia in all white almost.
Yeah. In C-3PO.
Yeah, C-3PO.
Covert mission. Mm-hmm. We'll send this golden robot with you. They didn't even bother to camouflage it. They didn't even paint his ass.
They gave Leia like a little bit of camouflage and stuff and a leather hat for some reason, but nope. Just send C-3PO and R2 out there. Whatever. Yeah. They'll be fine, probably. Or not.
Movies for the You know, I'm glad we actually were talking about Star Wars thing, because I felt that I was quite an asshole towards George Lucas in the last one about, you know, he has made umpteen billions, blah, blah, blah. Turns out George Lucas has actually given away a whole lot of his fortune to charities and whatnot.
Yes.
In fact, there's something about where he's building affordable housing on his land in California.
On Skywalker Ranch? Or...
Yeah. And here's the deal. Apparently, he was already involved in trying to develop affordable housing somewhere, and it just wasn't happening. So finally, he was just like, I got the money. I'm just going to build it on my land. And it's already zoned for residential. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And his neighbors are not too pleased. Because there are other billionaires.
I can imagine,
You're just going to invite drug dealers and prostitutes and all that kind of stuff, right? Because they're, you know, billionaire racists who have no idea how the average person lives.
Mm.
I have a different prediction on the people who will rush to occupy Skywalker Ranch affordable housing.
Yes.
Yes, I think it'll be rabid Star Wars fans who probably quit their jobs, sold everything they had to get to qualify to move in next door to the Skywalker Ranch. Yeah. I don't think you're going to have... Who are they going to deal drugs to? Other billionaires? No, you guys get prescription drugs. That's No, what are you talking about? Yeah, you're going to have a ton of mega fans.
I would live there.
Trying to get on there. I guess I. Yeah, why wouldn't I live there if I had an option to? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Skywalker Ranch, that'd be cool.
Wouldn't it be funny if it happens and it does turn out to be like the most crime-ridden spot in America?
It's Skywalker like Ranch? It's like you have to mutter it under your breath. It's like, oh, Sky.
It's a hive of scum and villainy. Mm.
Ah, oh, yeah.
No, it won't be.
No, it's not, but it would be sad and hilarious if it was.
I would love it.
Anyways, moving on to the next thing we want to talk about. Some interesting news coming out of Marvel. X-Men.
Yeah.
Marvel has revealed... 4chan revealed, really. It was a hack and released to 4chan several panels from X-Men, or the all-new X-Men number 40, which will come out April 22nd.
Yeah.
And it in these panels, in these pages, it reveals that Iceman, younger Iceman, young Bobby, is gay.
Yeah. I first heard this as Iceman is gay.
Iceman is gay.
I thought immediately they were talking about the movies.
Yeah, because that's the only one that makes sense.
So it's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And then they said, no, it's in the comics. And I thought they were talking about established Iceman. Was it Bobby Drake? Yeah.
Yeah.
Bobby Drake.
Bobby Drake.
Who in past storylines has like stolen girlfriends from other X-Men. And, has always hitting on. I mean, he's all over the place. So I thought, wow, that makes him like an extra big asshole. If he had no actual interest in those women
at all. Yeah, he's stealing women because he can. Because
he can?
And that's, because fuck you.
Yeah, that's not really what it is, though. So there's the past like 2-3 years or something like that, there's been a really weird X-Men time skip deal where like present day Beast brought all the original members, the versions of their younger selves of the X-Men, like the very first team, into the present.
Yeah.
And so we have like young Jean Grey, Scott Summers, you know, Cyclops, and I keep calling her Jean Grey. It's Jean Grey. Terrible habit. And Beast, Angel,
yeah, the whole right? gang.
So the original team, and so the one they're talking about here, the one that's revealed out as being gay, is actually this youngest version who's brought into the future, into the present day, and it's Jean Grey who reveals to him that, hey, you know, I can read your mind. I know that you're gay. Yeah.
In a private conversation.
In a private conversation, they do this. And the weird thing about that conversation is that they were talking about, like, well, future me, he's not gay. They're like, yeah, we know. So
yeah,
it's like, wait a minute. We're not talking about different realities. We're talking about the same time stream. Yeah. Plucked dude out of it, moved him ahead a couple years.
And he's suddenly not gay anymore.
He's not gay anymore. So what is Marvel... I mean, they're almost saying being gay is a choice, which is a dangerous message. Now, I notice I'm wearing my Got Christ t-shirt today, which is a Jay and Silent Bob thing. But it makes me think of those mega church like retreats where they go to heal you of your gayness.
They pray away the gay.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. That's what that conversation indicated to me. Mm-hmm. And I really don't think that's what they were going for at all.
I think they were just trying to explain it in a way that makes sense.
Which didn't.
No.
It just... And I'm... My biggest question on all of this is why was this...
Sell comics, man.
You think it's sell comics? Sell comics, maybe it's just, I mean, this is not Marvel's first gay character at all.
No, it's not. They've had a gay marriage in the X-Men, actually. Gay.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been gay versions of Wolverine and gay versions of...
So they're not breaking new ground.
Yeah, this isn't new at all. In any
sense. It's just... Yeah. It's weird.
Young Avengers have gay couples on their... Yeah, it's just, I don't get it.
I don't get it either. It's very strange, and if someone out there has, like, an explanation that makes sense, please let us know, inform us, get us in the loop, because...
Yeah, maybe it's something to do with the upcoming Secret Wars tie-in they're doing, I don't know.
How would being gay have anything to do with Secret Wars?
Hell if I know, man, they just made, like, Kitty Pryde and Gamora cosmically powered before Secret War starts. So who knows what the hell's happening. They just killed off Deadpool before Secret War starts.
Because he didn't want to be involved in it. He saw it coming.
Yeah. Secret Wars. Although he's going to have his own book, and so will his wife, Shikla.
Yeah.
So yeah, neither of us can figure it out why the writers decided to do that, make that move. I don't think it's a very cool gimmick to play to sell books.
No, I don't think it's a cool thing to play, and if that's what they're doing, then it's entirely uncool. Maybe in future issues they'll dive deeper into it, and then it'll offer some explanation, but as of right now, it's a move and a character especially that doesn't make any sense for this to happen to.
Yeah, when someone told me guess which X-Men they announced was gay, which happened earlier today, I was like, Colossus. Nope. I'm like, really? Oh, this is the one I would have guessed. I don't know. Jubilee, maybe. Maybe Jubilee is gay. Nope.
Cypher.
Yeah, so many options. Nope. Iceman. Who? What? Huh? You mean that guy that chases tail, like, as much as he can? What?
Even in the movies, he's done that.
Yeah, so it's a really strange. Maybe they're just really trying to switch up the direction of the character. Maybe they're trying to change that aspect of the character, make him less.
There's easier ways to do it that make more sense.
I agree. I would take it way differently. I would take like the James T. Kirk route. You know, because they were just in space.
Mm-hmm.
Battling out in space with the Guardians of the Galaxy and all that before this comic, this story arc happened.
Yeah.
Actually, within the same week, there was a comic where it ended. And, like, why couldn't he have hooked up with some crazy alien babe or something like that? Or it doesn't even have to be a babe, just an alien. Just some asexual alien thing. That would have been way different. Not usually done before. Nope. You know? I can't name too many Marvel characters that have hooked up with aliens. Star-Lord, that's that's it.
Star-Lord and Nova?
Oh, I'm sure Nova has. Yeah, and there's another. Yeah, that's. Like, this is the news that came out of Marvel this week. And speaking of Star-Lord proposed to Kitty Pryde this week.
Yeah.
And she said yes. I think that's bigger news than Bobby Drake is gay. Young Bobby Drake is gay, but old Bobby Drake isn't.
Yeah, because they've been building up to that for the entire Star-Lord series.
Yeah.
So far, from book one.
Yeah, and it's been a big part of X-Men with Kitty Pryde's story, too. So that's. And it's cosmic-powered Kitty Pryde at this point, too.
Ooh.
So, yeah. Who I would not want to mess with.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, in the comic, she phased an entire planet and all of its citizens through something. It was pretty badass. You're like, uh-oh.
That immense power is
just
terrifying
for anyone. Ridiculous levels of power. And, she's going to marry Peter Quill. Go, Pete.
Yep.
Good job.
You're the man, Star-Lord.
Right. Yeah, so I don't know. Unnecessary gimmick, apparently.
We'll see how it plays out. But
we'll see. And I don't want this to come out as if I'm like anti-Iceman being gay. I really could care less who Iceman wants to sleep with.
We're just trying to understand, just narrative-wise, why it happened.
And I don't want it to be a gimmick. I don't think it's cool to have someone's sexual preference be a gimmick to sell stuff.
No.
Yeah. That's just me. I just think that's rude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see what comes of it, but yeah.
Right,
just a weird story.
I wonder what would happen if the reverse happened. You know, like a notoriously gay character ended up being like, oh, actually I'm straight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
it would be the same level of confusion and just why. But yeah. Anyways, moving on. No more to say about this.
Yeah, we don't get it. Maybe you guys have more insight into it.
All right. So, last thing we want to talk about for this main episode. The Eisner Award nominees were just announced. For those of you that don't know, the Eisner Awards are essentially the comic book Emmys.
Yeah, they're like the Oscars for the comics.
Yeah. And yeah, it's the nominees for 2015 were just announced. And Chris and I, with our vast comic book knowledge that we occasionally like to whip out and throw around, we're going to go through the nominees and just make some predictions.
Yeah.
Some very early predictions on who we think will come away with the top prize.
Okay, yeah. And if you guys want to leave your comments on who you think is going to win in any of these, we'll find out.
Yeah.
We'll find out when they're actually awarded. But yeah, let's make some predictions here. You want to just go through the categories alphabetically?
We can. For some of these, we're not going to know a whole lot about it. Like this first one, the
best short story
category.
I would almost just completely skip this category.
Yeah, because we have nothing to offer. I've never read any of these, unfortunately.
I'll tell you what it is. The winner is probably going to be rule number one in Blackman, Bat, and White. Because I've heard of that, and I have not heard of any of these others.
Well, there you go.
That's why I'm going with that one.
Rule number one.
Yeah. Which is a DC. The other of these are out of, like, magazines, and there's
Superman one in there.
Yeah, there's Sound of One Hand Clapping, Adventures of Superman. Okay.
Right.
But kind of a weak category.
Yep.
Best single issue or one shot. We have Astro City number 16, Beasts of Burden, Hunters and Gatherers from Dark Horse. Astro City is a DC title, by the way, or Vertigo, either one. Madman in Your Face 3D Special and Image, Marvel's 75th Anniversary Celebration, and the Multiversity Pax Americana number 1 DC. I think this is clearly going to be the Multiversity Pax Americana.
This is really a fairly weak category. I'm surprised that there wasn't a more prolific contender with Multiversity.
No kidding. In fact, some of these, I'm surprised they even made it. Because there's a lot of really good one-shots that come out every year. And
yeah, the Marvel 75th Anniversary Celebration is one that kind of confused me. Because that was a sales gimmick. It was like an advertisement, really.
Yeah, I don't... Well, let's go with Best Continuing Series. Astro City made it again. Which, by the way, Astro City is a pretty good highbrow superhero story. And it's done by DC / Vertigo. I think now it's completely under the Vertigo title because it's nothing to do with the DC universe.
But Vertigo is just the indie arm of DC.
Exactly.
Not? Yeah.
Yeah. So I would recommend it if you're a fan of superheroes. And if you're a fan of, say, Watchmen, I would say Astro City's probably up your alley. Anyways, so Astro City, Bandette from Monkey Brain, Hawkeye, Saga from Image, Southern Bastards, also from Image, and The Walking Dead, also from Image. Wow. Half the contenders from Image. Tell you who you should be reading there.
This one, we both agree, has a clear favorite,
though. Yeah, I really think it's going to be Saga.
It's got to be Saga.
Yeah, Hawkeye's amusing, Astro City's interesting. Walking. I've never read Bandette.
Yeah.
Southern Bastards was...
good.
Pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good. Jason Aaron is pretty good. Yeah. Walking Dead, it's consistently good, but Saga is just consistently excellent. Amazing.
Yeah. And
I was going to say amazing, but I turned it to excellent.
It's excellent.
Excellent.
Yeah, excellent.
Excellent. That's how Canadians say excellent. I don't know.
And Saga, the sales numbers have really backed it up. I mean, talked about it before, the top selling trades for 2014, Saga had 4 out of the top 10 spots.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, Saga's ridiculously good
book. Yeah. And I think it had 1, 2, 4, and like 6 or 7. Just Saga is taking the comic book world by storm, just blowing it all
up. Oh, and it's really turned a spotlight to independent books and publishers like Vertigo and Image and IDW and stuff like that. And there is such good stuff out there that don't need sales gimmicks because they know their series is only going to be like at the longest, maybe like 10 issues long or 10 trades long. I mean, you know, of course, Walking Dead
past that. Two exceptions.
Yeah, those are major exceptions. Hellboy and stuff like that. They've been going on forever. Anyways, best limited series. Mm. Daredevil Road Warrior. Mm. Little Nemo Return to Slumberland. That was by IDW. Multiversity from DC. The Private Eye. Oh, okay. That's from Panel Syndicate. But it's a Brian K. Vaughan book. Who writes Saga? Brian K. Vaughan writes Saga. And The Sandman Overture by, of course, Neil Gaiman. I think because of the history behind it, I think Sandman will take this series. Even though I don't think it necessarily deserves it. I would, if I had to put my personal on what the best of these would be, I would choose The Daredevil by Mark Waid.
Mm-hmm. But Neil Gaiman has that name recognition, not just in comics, but in other literature. Plus, just Sandman was another one of those books that was just above and beyond anything else that has really been put out.
Yeah. Yeah, I almost take a little issue to this because half of this book was published in 2014. I mean, they're doing of Sandman. I mean, they're doing like one issue every like 4 months. It's taken a long time to get out.
But yeah,
it's Neil Gaiman, so he can do whatever the fuck he feels like. So, anyways, best new series. We got The Fade Out by Ed Brubaker. That's an Image comic. Lumberjanes by from Boom, which has been real popular. Miss Marvel from Marvel. Rocket Raccoon, another Marvel. And then Wicked and Divine by Kieran Gillen, which is another Image title.
This one's tough.
This is tough. Best new series.
I would say it's probably going to go to Miss Marvel.
I think it's also probably going to go to Miss Marvel.
As much as I like Rock Raccoon and The Wicked and Divine, I got to say Miss Marvel has been great so far.
I would feel that Rocket Raccoon is actually the weakest contender out of all of these.
Yeah, but I got a soft spot for Scotty Young.
Sure, yeah.
He gets me.
Yeah. it's a great book, but... Yeah.
It's just a very tough field.
This is a tough field. Wicked and Divine is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But Miss Marvel, I think, will probably take it. Lumberjanes is also really good. But even though I think Lumberjanes probably deserves it, I think Miss Marvel will probably take it. Best publication for early readers. Seven and under. We're going to skip that.
We don't know any of that.
Best publications for kids, 8 to 12.
Batman Little Gotham.
Yeah, Batman Little Gotham
is the only one that I've really.
I was known the from cat. This list. I was the cat. They're calling that 8 through 12.
I was the cat.
It's about this cat that's been like this immortal cat, essentially. I guess is the best way to describe this story. Who has been present for all these historical events. And I don't think it's for 12 and under. history is not all sugar and nice stuff. So I was a little surprised to see that. And then, of course, Little Nemo and then Tiny Titans. I don't know. Who cares?
Yeah.
Whatever. Tiny Titans will probably take that. Best publication for teens. All right. Doom Boy. Haven't read it, actually. The Dumbest Idea Ever. Lumberjanes, again, gets in there. Meteor Men. The Shadow Hero. And The Wrenchies. Wow. Most of these I have not heard of.
Which is weird, because 13 and 17 seems like a kind of wheelhouse for comics, does it not?
Jesus, yeah. It seems to me that Lumberjanes is the obvious winner here. I mean, two of these I've never even heard of.
Yeah.
So I think that's an easy Lumberjanes there. Best publication for teens? Wait, what's...
No, yep, they just printed it twice.
Oh, it's... Okay, wait, what? Okay. Best humor publication. The Complete Cul-de-Sac, Dog Butts in Love, Gru vs. Conan, Rocket Raccoon, and The Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
I will say, you didn't quite read the entire title of the second one. It's Dog Butts in Love and Stuff Like That and Cats.
That's fair. Okay, by Jim Benson. Very fair. Okay. The Complete Cul-de-Sac and Dog Butts in Love and Stuff Like That and Cats, I haven't read.
Yeah.
Gru vs. Conan, very funny, but it's also very dated material.
Yeah. Superior Foes of Spider-Man was not as funny as I would say for it.
I really think Rocket Raccoon's probably going to take this.
Rocket Raccoon is probably going to take it. It's a very whimsical art style as well, with the Scotty Young kind of signature,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what you call it, simplicity almost
to
it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. Gru vs. Conan was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I actually thought that Superior Foes of Spider-Man was pretty dumb.
Yes.
I mean, I read like the first two issues and I was like, this is a waste of my fucking time.
Yeah.
And went on with life. But it was only supposed to be like a 4-issue series and ended up lasting way longer than that, almost 8 or so. All right. Best digital web comic.
Let's see if.
I'm glad this is a category.
I'm glad it's a category.
Yeah.
I haven't read any of these, unfortunately. Brian Vaughn writes a web comic?
Well, yeah. Wow. It
can't be K Vaughn, right?
No, it's Brian Vaughn. That's probably Brian K. Vaughn. Unless there's just another Brian Vaughn out there that writes comics. I'm not familiar with any of these, actually. So, sorry, I read too much.
I'm glad it's a category, though.
Yeah, I am glad it's a category. But it's also one of those categories where it's just saturated.
Yes.
With it's, there are so
it's
many.
It's hard to get comics. A true winner in this in the webcomic category, just because there are so infinitely many to choose from, and there's always going to be a couple that slip under the rug and are just unseen by this panel, which is unfortunate if they really do deserve to win this.
All right, this one's actually kind of boring. Best anthology. There's a horror anthology, In the Dark. Little Nemo's up again. Dream Another Dream. Massive, gay, erotic manga, and The Men Who Make It. Okay. Masterful Marks, Cartoonists Who Changed the World, and To End All Wars, the graphic anthology of the First World War. These are the anthologies they picked?
What would you have picked?
I don't really like anthologies to begin with.
Yeah.
I
don't know. I feel like the Cartoonists Who Changed the World and the graphic anthology of the First World War would be interesting.
Yes.
I wouldn't say I would buy either of them over half the things on this list, but they would be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Little Nemo has been in a couple of different categories, so...
Probably a
And good... the other categories Little Nemo was in was... He was not the contender, so they might just give this one to Little Nemo. That's my prediction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about the rest of these. Best reality-based work.
Never heard of any of these.
Can't we talk about something more pleasant? Bloomsbury. Dragon's Breath and Other True Stories. Dragon's Breath. I wonder what the true story behind that is. I know there was a shotgun round called Dragon's Breath once. Might even still be around. El Defo. That's fun. Hip Hop Family Tree. That's fun stuff. Nathan Hale's Hazardous Tales and To End All Wars. Oh, it's that other graphic anthology.
Yeah.
Huh, I don't know.
End All Wars, maybe?
Maybe. I'll go with Hip Hop Family Tree. That's pretty fun. That's a fun one. Best Graphic Album. The Gigantic Beard That Was Evil.
Love it.
That was fun. Here, Kill My Mother, The Motherless Oven, Seconds.
Sequel to Kill My Mother.
Yes. Seconds, and This One Summer. Seconds is probably going to take this.
Seconds is probably going to take it by the writer of Scott Pilgrim, most famously.
Yes.
Also a great book on its own right. Though This One Summer I read and was also fantastic.
Yeah.
So
these are all pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, Gigantic Beard That Was Evil is pretty fun too.
Yeah. It's
Kill My Mother was
pretty It's a fun. Very different type of book than Seconds or This One Summer though.
Oh yeah. Best Graphic Album. That's an interesting... And those are the new. Those are the new.
Yeah.
Best Graphic Album Reprint. Now, graphic albums, they're essentially like adult picture books, I guess is the best way to describe a graphic album.
It's graphic novel, though, is it not? Because Seconds is... I'm trying to distinguish what is what, because there's like trade paperbacks, hardcovers, anthologies, graphic novels, all that kind of stuff. And
well, I've always considered graphic novels to be essentially anything that is trade paperback or, you know, like bound, that is for an adult audience, not for a kid.
Okay, that's fair. The way I've always...
I don't know if that's the actual definition.
The way I've always kind of gone with it is if it was at one point released in weekly or monthly form, it's a comic. And if it was released all at once, it's a graphic novel.
Okay, yeah.
And it was, like, meant to be read as one continuous thing. But,
There's another category here for graphic album reprints, but I'm not really familiar with any of these.
Yeah.
Yeah. Through the Woods. No, I'm thinking of a musical called Into the Woods. Never mind. Oh, these are lame.
Yeah.
Best archival collection, strips that are at least 20 years old. Yeah, don't care.
I'm 21. Not going to happen for me. I don't know anything.
And here's the other collection that's about this, comic books that are at least 20 years old.
I don't think Walt Disney's going to be a shoo-in for the Eisner Award.
Yeah, so they have these for comic strips, you know, and then comic books.
Mm-hmm.
So Nick Fury, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that would be cool. That'd be cool. And mm-hmm. Walt Disney, DuckTales. Disney's got a couple up here.
Yeah.
Uncle Scrooge and Donald Duck. I think I've read that. That was pretty good. Uncle Scrooge got his new series started today, by the way.
Woo.
Speaking of Uncle Scrooge, good for kids. It's fun. Best U.S. edition of international material. Whoa.
Haven't read any of these.
These are out there. Best U.S. edition of international material, Asia. Asia gets its own category.
Its own category, because there's so much, I guess, manga and stuff.
Sure. All You Need Is Kill. The Clothes Called Fat. Master Keaton. One Punch Man. Well, I don't know why I'm selecting these. And Showa. 1939 to 1955. A History of Japan. And then there's a last one. Wolf Children. Amy and Yuki. I think that is probably going to go to All You Need Is Kill. Good manga. And it's pretty popular here in the States. They did the Tom Cruise movie. It was based off of All You Need Is Kill. That Edge of Tomorrow, I think it is.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah. So if you've seen Edge of Tomorrow, that's All You Need Is Kill is the basis.
Inspiration.
Yeah, the inspiration of that. I'm not as familiar with the rest of these, though.
No. All right. We're getting into things we know.
We're getting the better stuff. Okay. Yes.
All right. Best writer, next category. You got Jason Aaron, who did Original Sin, Thor, Men of Wrath for Marvel, and Southern Bastards for Image.
And is writing Star Wars right now.
And is writing Star Wars? Oh, how did they not throw that up? I guess it's not 2014.
No.
But whatever. Kelly Sue DeConnick, sorry. Kelly Sue DeConnick, who is writing Captain Marvel and Pretty Deadly.
Mm-hmm.
Grant Morrison, who wrote Multiversity and The Annihilator for Legendary Comics. Brian K. Vaughan, who wrote Saga and Private Eye. J. Willow Wilson, who's writing Miss Marvel. And Gene Luen Yang, who wrote Avatar, The Last Airbender, and The Shadow Hero.
Avatar's been... Those comics are actually really good.
This is tough, because Brian K. Vaughan won last year for Saga.
Yeah.
Grant Morrison, we already gave an award for Multiversity. Miss Marvel's been fantastic.
Jason Aaron, I think, is definitely a contender.
Yes.
However, they may think he's probably going to get it next year with Star Wars.
Yeah.
Maybe, maybe not. So,
he'll get something next year for Star Wars. Either
Best
new, best continuing, best writer, whatever, for Star Wars. Because that's been, I would say, his best work in this.
Yeah. Grant Morrison's work has been... Although I'm not a big fan of all the DC stuff that's been going on, his stuff has been really good. Jeez. If I personally had to choose between all of these, I think I would have to give it to... I'd have to give it to Jason Aaron. Brian K. Vaughan is a very close second, though.
Yeah, I would say Brian K. Vaughan is mine.
Okay.
Because it's 2014 that we're judging.
Yes.
Not 2015.
That's fair. Best writer or artist? I'm sorry. Sergio Aragonés, the guy who draws Gru. Kind of out there, like props. I love your stuff, dude. Props. I mean, isn't like Mad Magazine and all that, but
yeah,
I wouldn't call you best. It's writer artist.
Yeah,
okay,
so you need to be both the writer and the artist.
Oh, that's why he's on there. That makes sense. Okay, and then let's see. We got Charles Burns for Sugar Skull, which I'm not familiar with. Stephen Collins, the giant beard that was evil. Very fun. Richard McGuire from here, Stan Sakai, Usagi Yojimbo, and Rene Telgemeier Sisters. Huh, I'm not familiar with that one. This is totally personal, but Stan Sakai.
It's very hard against Stan Sakai and Usagi Yojimbo.
Yeah, and Usagi Yojimbo had some pretty cool shit that came out in
2014.
Stan Sakai had some really good shit that came out in 2014, too. Because they did his version of 47 Ronin.
Yeah?
Yeah. Which, if you saw the Keanu Reeves movie, that is the worst version of 47 Ronin. Possible.
Yeah.
Probably. Not because of Keanu Reeves. Okay, best penciler, inker. We got the penciler from Miss Marvel, Adrian Aldofina. Screw that. Silver Surfers, Mike Aldred. It's been fun. Multiversities, Frank Quatermain. Man, they're really giving a lot of stuff to Multiversity.
Mm-hmm. Francois Schulten.
Very good, thank you. From The Leaning Girl, or Fiona. Yeah. Oh, Fiona Staples from Saga. And Babs Tarr from Batgirl.
Batgirl's penciler's name Babs.
Yeah, that's fun.
Alright, Capullo's not on this list.
Capullo's not on this list.
That's shocking to me.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Aldred, I like your work, but I'm surprised you were considered for this.
Yes. Silver Surfer's a very almost experimental art style.
It's very stylized. I mean, it's very almost stylized retro,
mm-hmm.
I would say.
I don't know. I've always been a huge fan of Capullo, though. He didn't do as much as most of these people did last year. I will say that much.
I really don't think any of these people hold a candle to Fiona Staples.
No. I think she's going to run away with it again. Yeah, one last year. I think the year before, even.
Yeah. I don't think this is a very good, accurate representation of the best of the industry, either. No. But Fiona Staples, to me, is just head and shoulders above the rest of here in the category. All right. Let's see what we got for Best Painter or Multimedia Artist. This is for the interior art, of course. We have the artist for Jay Bird, Dark Horse's Jay Bird, Lori and Jaco Ahon, Colin Coover from Bandette, Mike Del Mundo from Elektra. That's been actually pretty decent. Guandro Gordino, Black Sad, or Emilio. It's a Dark Horse title. And J.H. Williams III, Sandman. I'm going to go with the Sandman, J.H. Williams III.
I'm going to go with Elektra just because it's something different. It's the nice kind of watercolor type effect. And you don't see it that much, and I like to reward.
Well, you know, and that's a tougher script story to have really interesting art to. It's easy to do very basic. Sandman, it's almost, I mean, you're really given a lot of really esoteric, cool, wacky shit you can do. Yeah. But I still think Sandman's going
to
take that.
Yeah. Well, going back to the penciler inker real quick.
Sure.
I don't think he deserved it this year, but a couple years ago when Fiona Staple won, I would say that Ivan Reese, who I don't believe was even nominated, should have won for his run on Aquaman.
Oh, yeah.
Because the art in the first, I think, two, maybe three trades of Aquaman is absolutely breathtaking. The scenes that he, just giant full-page scenes of Atlantis and, like, armies of these fishmen. It's incredible. And I feel like Saga doesn't quite match that.
Oh, best cover artist. Mm-hmm. Ready for this one?
Yep.
Darwin Cook, right? He had his own run of DC variants. Mike Del Mundo, doing a lot of stuff for Marvel. Yeah. Francisco Francavilla, doing a lot of stuff with Dark Horse.
Dark Horse, yeah.
And Dynamite. I like his style.
Mm-hmm.
James McClevey, I like his style too. He was doing stuff for Wicked and Divine and Miss Marvel. Phil Noto, Black Widow. And then Alex Ross.
Mm.
Jeez.
I'm going to go with Phil Noto in this.
Oh, the Black Widow. Really? No, those have been... this is cover art. And that Black Widow cover has been very simple, stylized, but effective. It's almost like propaganda art.
It's in the same lines as the Hawkeye covers. Especially in the early thing. And I believe whoever was doing the cover art for Hawkeye won.
Oh, good.
I think.
That's cool.
So I would see that as a favorite to these panels that are judging on it.
I would say Alex Ross is clearly a major contender here.
Mm.
But my favorite would probably be Francesco Francavilla. He did the Afterlife with Archie and the Grindhouse covers and Twilight Zone covers and Django Zorro covers, and they've been really good. I like them.
Yeah.
Colorers.
Yeah, best coloring.
Silver Surfer's Laura Aldred.
Mm-hmm.
We got Little Nemo coming back again. Little Nemo
once again.
Yeah, and Wild Blue Yonder, Nelson Daniel. Mm-hmm. Oh.
So we got the colors from The Graveyard Book.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we got Lovern Kinzerski.
Sorry.
Lovern. Matthew Petz from The Leg. Dave Stewart from Hellboy and Hell.
Yeah,
and a lot of some other ones that titles. I never heard of.
Yeah, ton of Dark Horse titles.
And then Matthew Wilson from Adventures of Superman, The Wicked and Divine, Daredevil, and Thor.
Oh,
which is a heck of a resume.
All right. Although Matthew Wilson, I think, will probably take this.
Yeah. Just based on body of work.
Well, and just doing a great job.
Yeah.
All those titles are beautiful. Brilliant. I actually have to pick my personal favorite out of these is Nelson Daniel, the guy who worked on Little Nemo and Judge Dredd and Wild Blue Yonder. Wild Blue Yonder, by the way, is an incredibly good, like totally undersold, unsung hero as far as books are concerned. Really well done. Took a long time to get it out, but it was really good.
I'm going to go with... She's not going to win, I don't think, but Laura Alred with Silver Surfer. Because the...
They're very vibrant colors.
Very vibrant retro colors just stand out in that book, and it's really what makes the book what it is as identity.
That's fair. Lettering.
Best lettering. I can't tell between any lettering.
Well, let's see what the books are. Miss Marvel, Daredevil. That's a Joe Kaminga. Fables, Sandman, Unwritten. Another one from Todd Klein. Vapor. What? Never heard of that. Afterlife with Archie. And then Archie Guys with Jack Morelli. And then Stan Sakaigan.
Yep. He does everything on his books.
Now, I really only have to look at the body of work here. I would go with Todd Klein on that. But, I mean, Fables, Sandman, Unwritten, those are top-notch, especially Unwritten and Fables. Those are both books that are about literature, and the lettering in those are extraordinarily important and really tell the story to find, especially in Unwritten. So, I think it's clearly Todd Klein. Yeah.
All right. There you go, Todd Klein.
Yeah.
Best lettering.
But if I had to meet any of those people, it would be Stan Sakai.
Oh, yeah. So, best comics-related periodical journalism. Got Alter Ego, Comic Book Creator, Comic Book Resources, Comics Alliance, and TCJ.com.
Oh.
This one, it's Comic Book Resources.
Oh.
It's got to be, right?
Oh, yeah. I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably Comic Book Resources.
Yeah, I know that's the one I always go to, so.
Yeah. Best comics-related book. What the?
So these are books about comic books.
Oh, let's just ignore this.
Yeah. Best scholarly academic work. Anything of interest in here? Considering Watchmen, poetics, property, politics. Oh, seems somewhat interesting.
Yeah, I'm not that.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, past that. Wow, they really gave Little Nemo a lot of credit. I didn't think it was like that amazing, but
yeah,
you know, I'm not the target demographic for that. So it doesn't look like Image is going to completely clean up like they did last year. Because they're just not nominated for as much stuff. But I think it's safe to say that, like, when you see some of those, like, best new series that they came up with, and that, like, those series that were half Image.
Yeah.
They'll probably take some of those. But I don't think Saga's going to clean up quite as much this year.
No, Saga won 4 awards last year.
Uh-huh. I think we're going to see a lot more being spread out to Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
Was on there a lot. Little Nemo was on there a lot, which kind of surprised me. Silver Surfer was on there a couple of times. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. Tell us what you guys think.
Yeah, that's what we had for the most part today. So, it's time to raise a glass. Yes, that time where we raise a glass to something that we talked about in the episode that we feel deserves more recognition.
Yes.
Chris, you got anything to...
I'll go with Contra.
Contra! Just simply Contra.
Contra. Oh, well, yeah. Just Contra.
Just Contra. Contra. All right. Yeah. To Contra. Contra. Didn't give me much time to think about mine. Let's see. I'm going to raise a glass to proper camouflage in jungle environments.
I will also raise a glass.
C-3PO should not ever be in a jungle environment.
Please.
Chewbacca.
At least not on a covert mission. Please. Yeah. It's like... It's like the rebel commanders are like all colorblind.
They're just like, yeah, he'll be fine. He's gray like everything else.
Cinderbot. Jeez. Yeah. At any rate.
Yeah.
Well, hey, thanks for watching, everybody.
Yes, thank you. If you want to see more of us, we are on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Tumblr. We're everywhere on the internet. Facebook is at Geek News and Craft Brews, all spelled out. That's where you'll see links to everything we have. You'll see beer profiles talking about what we drank each week and what we thought of it. Initial impressions, mine had legs better than your mother. Like, it's just all the way up this glass.
Wow.
For a summer beer beer.
For summer beer beer.
For summer beer beer. Not my favorite, but decent.
Yeah, this is actually... pretty good IPA, Racer 5. Yeah. It's definitely solid. It hits everything that an IPA should be.
Alright, well there you go. And stay tuned for the bonus video that's going to come out on Saturday. We're going to be talking about the Golden State Orchestra that performed a superhero theme medley, really. Yeah. Seeing they had an entire performance based around music and superhero movies and TV shows and those iconic themes that you can't get out of your head no matter how long it's been since you've seen the movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about some of our favorites, and yeah, it'll be fun. Cool. So, yeah, there will always be more news for us to report, so we'll always be back next week. Until then, cheers.
Cheers. Thanks for watching, everyone.